are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Listening to LA Talk Radio. I don't know where my guest host is today. He must be in traffic or stuck in the elevator. I'm wishing him all the best. Here's hoping that he's fine. But we have more than enough people to chat with today. Three guests, actually. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. Molly Harrison is an agoraphobic mortician anchored to the safety of her funeral home for over 3 years. Her vivacious mother and precocious teenage daughter try in their own humorous ways to help her take that first step down the front walk, including hypnosis, sensory overload therapy, and a trip to Moscow. But in the end, Molly must realize what is truly important in her life before the power of love can finally inspire her to embrace the world again. The play is called Wake.
And LA's acclaimed Sea Glass Theater presents the West Coast premiere of this poignant comedy. And today we are joined by the leading actor and the director from that production, as well as playwright Carrie Krim.
We got everybody.
We do, right?
We got everybody.
And she'll be joining us by phone in a few minutes. Here in studio with us, however, is actor Alison Blanchard and director Matt Kirkwood.
Yes, there. Matt is sort of
on his way. Yes, everyone's late today.
But we got, you were running.
Right on the cusp there.
Just running. What happened?
You know, I couldn't find my keys.
You couldn't find your keys?
I put them down in an unusual place.
Oh, okay. Yes. You don't want to go into too much detail.
I do not.
With that,
no, yeah.
Okay. that was my key thing.
The key sound effect.
So Matt's going to be here a little later. We're, He's the hardest working man in show business.
Is he?
Matt Kirkwood.
Aside from you.
Well,
And me.
I got a lot.
And Allison.
I got a lot of plates spinning. If only some of those plates paid. You know? That's my thing. That's my issue.
What a concept.
But Allison, good to have you here. Welcome
thank
to the
you
show.
Thank you very much.
Very
it's
delighted.
Good to be
lovely,
here.
Beautiful red
and
hair that
yes.
she has.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Very recently nice. Refreshed.
Recently refreshed.
As they say.
And the equally lovely Carrie Krim, who is waiting on the phone, and we'll chat with her briefly as soon as we'll turn her microphone on shortly.
How was your
but
week,
before
Paul?
We do, my week was good, Michael. Very sort of manic, but fun.
Tech was week, of course.
Tech week for the show. Yeah. Wake at the Fremont Center Theater, 1000 Fremont Avenue in South Pasadena.
Hey, we don't give any plugs on this show.
Seaglasstheater.org.
Theater
has the R-E spelling.
Oh,
but no,
Lord.
Just got back from Penn State where my film, The Beating, was screened and very, very successful.
Yes.
Went very well with the College Town Film Festival.
As well it should.
It was quite a joy. And also, I'm going to talk about this in the middle of the hour. I got to see, I was sort of on assignment in New York City for State of the Arts and got to see the latest incarnation of Tony and Tina's and pee-inducingly funny. Is that okay to say? Pee-inducingly?
Pee-inducingly? Say that or a variety of other things. Yeah.
And your week, how was yours?
You know, it was very, very nice, Paul. It was good. Busy, hectic. I've got, of course, I'm working with you on your show, which is a pleasure as always. And another show, 3D Theatricals. Presentation of Into the Woods, you know, at the beautiful historic Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton. And it's got an amazing cast of people. Betts Malone, if you remember Betts, who's been on this show before, was playing the witch. And our friend Jeff Scowron is also playing the baker. And, you know, he's the male lead in the show.
We had both of them on the show.
We did. We did. So it's a beautiful production that I'm very excited to see. And last night I also had the pleasure of attending a very interesting evening at the home of Karen Lanyon, who is the Australian Consul General here in Los Angeles, in honor of the Australian Theatre
You hang
company.
With some muckety-mucks, Michael.
I'll tell you, this house was out of this world.
I would imagine
up in,
so.
North of Sunset in Brentwood. And just beautiful, and what a lovely evening it was. And it is the Australian Theatre Company, which is very prestigious, is now laying down its foundation here in Los Angeles at the Matrix Theater.
Oh, okay.
And they are putting their first production up, opens on May 10th, and it's called Holding the Man, which is one of Australia's major theatrical plays. It's come out of that country, and it's also stormed the West End in London, and it's doing all other places. So.
Holding the Man.
Yes,
I did that in college, but I was just experimenting. Yes.
Lady!
Sorry. I'm so sorry. You'll have to forgive me for that
one. Slow on the take on
sorry.
That one.
But, I don't mean to blow, but we're going to have them on the show, right?
We are going to have some of them, and there were just loads of Australian celebrities there last night, which were all cool, speaking with that amazingly fabulous accent, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, g'day, you know, it was everything. Right.
Loads of fun. Any that you care to share, or do you have to sort of
Some of them, they're all people that maybe our fellow Americans would not necessarily know, because they're here working and living now. Cameron Datto, who is one of the famous stars down there, and also Joshua Hornby, who is an amazing dancer and a choreographer and one of the judges on the Australian version of Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. All right.
And a lovely guy, actually, and so many of them. They were, they're just a very gentle people. And I do want to just do a shout-out to one gal who is fantastic, and she owns a... I'm going to shout out her company. It's called G'day, which, of course, means good day in Aussie. And she did some amazing desserts, and it's called Bronzed Aussie, and it is downtown Los Angeles. It's the only location, 714 South Los Angeles Street, Suite 714A. Go there. Get some of these Australian desserts out of this world.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
So an Australian dessert is just a British dessert that's in prison, right? Is that?
If you want to put it that way.
You don't have any Aussie jokes, Mike.
Incarcerated dessert.
Incarcerated dessert. Yes,
my next band.
Incarcerated dessert. Love it. Well, Michael, let's. Carrie's waiting so patiently.
I'm so excited to meet Carrie
Crim. Phone, yeah. And I'm going to turn on her phone, and you give her the intro. She is so due. Would you?
I will do that. Originally an actress, Carrie Crim found her calling as a playwright by accident. She was a theater major at Northwestern University and focused on being an actor in Los Angeles for a while, doing the rounds on a couple TV projects. She also resided in London for a while and worked at the Royal Court Theater. She returned to her home in Michigan on what was sort of supposed to be a pit stop at the Purple Rose Theater Company in Detroit. And there at that company, Jeff Daniels, the acclaimed theater.
It's his place.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's such an acclaimed theater, which ended up producing her first play. Growing Pretty was the name of that. And Crim's second play, Wake, was also produced at the Purple Rose. Now a New York resident, Crim's latest play, Conviction, is a co-production by Long Island's Bay Street Theater in the Hamptons, the Rubicon Theater in Ventura, California, and the Royal Manitoba Theater of Canada, and Dead Posh Productions in London, England. Wow. Please welcome playwright Carrie Crim.
Carrie! Carrie, how are you?
Hi there. I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm good. Good.
Welcome to Los Angeles.
So
Thank you so much. I was glad that I wasn't on right away because housekeeping came in just as we started.
Oh, that pesky housekeeping!
Going to be allowed loud hotel rooms. Today.
Did you get the chocolate though? Did you at least get the chocolate?
I did not get chocolate
today.
I think my husband
night.
Might have snatched that up already.
I'm sorry. See, Michael is far more effective than I am. He's like, no, that's turn down service, peasant. Don't you even know it's turn down, you illiterate bastard.
I just turned down service at my house.
So I met Carrie last night.
Oh.
She was at the theater.
Yes.
She is as beautiful as she is talented. It was lovely to meet her face to face.
Wow.
And very excited about producing her play. She sat in on a rehearsal last night. We're sort of doing a Q2Q and then did a speed through.
It's really fun for me to get to see it realized in a completely different way. With the actual, the actual funeral home.
Yeah, that's just
stage. The set is just beautiful that you guys have created.
That's and kudos to not only Aaron Henderson for his design, but also to Bob Blanchard for his brilliant work.
I was going to say, I'll tell my husband.
And putting all that stuff together.
it's really, really lovely.
See, that's the difference between Seaglass and Purple Rose Theaters. Like, this is how much flex you have as a theater company. We can get a coffin, but they can get corpses.
Yes.
And that's
I think they looked into having a coffin, and then they went a different direction with it, design-wise and everything else. But the coffin that you have is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a very, and we should also stress to people, just in case they think that this is a macabre piece, you know, we're talking about coffins and corpses. It is just that
they're hysterical.
There's some funny stiffs.
Lady!
The play itself, you know what? This is a good point, Carrie. Can you sort of give our listeners your take on a synopsis of your work and sort of how you describe it to others?
Well, I tried to do that in a newspaper interview the other day, and when I was done, she said, "Are you sure this is a comedy?" So I'm not sure that I'm the right person. But no, it is a comedy about a family. There's three generations of women living in one house: a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter. The mother is the funeral director, mortician, and you know, without giving too much away, they suffered a loss of the husband. And since then, Molly, because of the way that the husband died, she has been afraid to go outside, or at least you think that that's the main reason. It ends up that there's some deeper reasons as well. And it's, I'm so bad at this part.
It's okay.
I'm really terrible at doing the summary, it's really about people learning to embrace life again and the family sort of coming together and learning how to live in the face of so much loss.
You know, and one of the reasons that this appealed to us so much, because we read a lot of plays, Seaglass, we read a lot of plays in preparing for our one show a year, which is what we put all our focus on one show. And that it's not only what Carrie also described, but the other thing is there are not a lot of plays with three female characters, and especially three generations of women represented. And I think that's a real engine of this show, is that sort of the relationship that they have and how the world is different to all three of them. I mean, Allison, you're playing Molly, the mother,
mm-hmm.
And
yes,
you have to cope with not only your daughter, but also with your mother. And that has to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. The like you say, the relationships inform each other. You know, how I am with my daughter is informed by how I've been with my mother. And it is really fun to work in this way with the generational.
Yeah.
You know, most plays, you don't find this.
And you don't get to see what could be an older representation of yourself or a younger representation
exactly.
of yourself in the same play.
Exactly. And we see, you know, where in the daughter, she gets that from her father, she gets that from me.
Right.
You know.
And, you know, Carrie, you're writing about the very subject matter of death and what follows that is a sensitive subject, certainly, for, you know, many reasons. And yet out of it comes so many different things that are unexpected. First, you know, reevaluating your own life and others around you, and then finding some sort of content, you know, with the circumstances, if it's through humor or some other way. So that's what I'm assessing is what we're talking about here.
Carrie was,
and I also love the way that Molly sort of has the sensitivity toward the dead, that because she's not afraid of it, in a way, I feel like it helps us as an audience face it. You know, she can't face the outside world, but she is able to face that, and so there's a strength to her, even though she's dealing with weaknesses as well.
Was there a causal event for this? I mean, aside from the very funny thing that was listed in your bio, which I want to sort of encapsulate now, she was, you were breaking some rules and writing your own monologues for auditions. Is that correct?
I was writing my own monologues for auditions, and I had a playwright that I made up, a name that I made up that was actually a girl that I went to summer camp with when I was a kid. And I would make up titles of the plays because people had always told me, you know, if you're writing your own monologues, they're going to think that you're just telling stories that are true and that you're not really acting. And so I had this whole thing going in, and a director called me one night after an audition, and I was positive that I had booked it, and he said, "No, you didn't get the job. We went another direction, but I really like that monologue." And I was trying to find the play, and I just can't find it anywhere. I'm about to send my assistant out to look for it, and it was pouring rain outside. And I thought, I can't have this poor assistant, you know, traipsing over to Drama Books or wherever she wants to go and realize that there's no play. So I came clean, but it was really sweet because he said, "Look, I really liked it, and I think it would be a wonderful thing if you wrote that play. And if you ever do, you know, please send it to me." And it took me a few years to really come around to trusting myself as a writer enough to write that play. And by the time I did, I don't even remember who this director was or what the project was.
Well,
but I did end up sending it to the Purple Rose. So.
Well, we are certainly, as the Purple Rose is, and we are certainly grateful that that whole chain of events happened, because it gave us Wake, which we're very, very excited about. I want to throw the information out there before we move on to our in-studio guests here. This is Wake, written by Carrie Krim, directed by Matt Kirkwood, who just joined us. This is at the Fremont Center Theater at 1000 Fremont Avenue in South Pasadena. Tickets and information, seaglasstheater.org. Theater has the R-E spelling. And we open Saturday night, this coming Saturday. We have about, I think, about a half a dozen left. And you will get to meet the cast and the playwright on Saturday night if you attend. And there's wine and Russian food. There's a whole Russian theme.
Food. And then there's a special Mother's Day event coming up,
oh,
too.
Yes. There's a Mother's Day high tea on May 11th, where you can bring Mom to the theater, and they have a beautiful outdoor garden there at the Fremont. Have you ever been to that space?
I have not, but yes. I'm so excited to see it this weekend.
Carrie, thank you so much for joining us. We're
so grateful you
took the time to chat with us.
Thank you so much, and I will talk to you guys later.
We'll look forward to seeing you tonight and this weekend as well.
Carrie, now we want you to get down to that pool right now. Yeah. Take that margarita that you're already sipping on and get down there to that pool, all right?
I will head down.
Don't
now.
Don't make us Thank come over
guys.
There.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, okay. Carrie. Bye-bye now.
What a lovely lady.
Yeah, she was a joy. She was nice to chat with, and she was very, very complimentary about what she saw last night. And for her to see it in that sort of piecemeal kind of Q2Q quasi-speed through, you know, how every technique is, you know, it was very, very nice to hear that we're held up in the same esteem as the acclaimed Purple Rose Theater in Michigan, in Detroit. Great space there.
Nice.
So
nice indeed.
I'm going to announce our next guest, who has always been a sucker for a laugh. Her favorite roles have been Rita Laporta in Lucky Stiff, Sister Mary Ignatius in that same show, explains it all for you. And she's classically trained at UC Berkeley. She has appeared in loads of plays and musicals, including Henry IV, Part 1. She was Lady Percy, Macbeth, Lady Macbeth, The Boyfriend, Hortense. Reminds me of a terrible, terrible British joke.
Oh, please.
Isn't that Hortense? No, she looks pretty relaxed to me. Hortense, get it? And Midsummer Night's Dream, which she was in twice. In addition to her film and TV credits, her voiceover work can be heard in Disney theme parks worldwide, including the voices of the computers in Mission Space at Epcot and Star Tours at Disneyland and Tokyo Disneyland. Her association with Seaglass Theater, where she is now a company member, dates from her appearance in A Christmas Twist in December of 2012, where she was an absolute hoot, and I speak from personally observing that role and directing her in it as well. She tackles the complex role of Molly in Seaglass Theater's production of Wake, opening this Saturday, Fremont Center Theater, South Pasadena. Please welcome Allison Blanchard. Hi.
Hello,
Hi.
Allison.
How are you? I love that canned applause. Can I just take some of that
with
me?
It's not canned.
Oh, you know what? And let's also, for Matt Kirkwood, who has joined us, let's throw some his way, too.
Yeah, you see? Wow. Just as enthusiastic. Hey. It's the first I've ever heard that.
So how are you?
I mean, aside
from tired.
Completely exhausted and freaked out, but well.
How late did it go last night?
Not too crazy, was it? I don't know. I left early because I know people.
No, I think they were out about 11. Is that what it was?
It was 11:30 before I was out
there. 11:30,
easily.
That's early.
It was late.
Oh, for tech week.
That's tired. Yeah. It's early for tech
week. And the other thing, too, is that...
Well, and mind you, to be fair, the actors get to leave a lot earlier than everybody else does.
That's
so,
true.
You know, I have to give a great deal of appreciation to our producers and directors and all our tech people who have been slaving.
Yes, yeah, so, and one of the women who's been in the trenches there is Carol. Well, not only Carol Doring, is that her last name? I only call her Carol, but our lighting person for that, and also Ken Sawyer, the sound designer, is doing great work. It's really... Carrie sort of gave the synopsis of the show. So can you give sort of a synopsis of who Molly is in the world of the play that she's already described to us? Like, who do you think this character of Molly is? I mean, I don't want you to give too much away.
I'm having a hard time, like, how do I describe it without, because Carrie was careful about, you know, they had a loss. So, I think this is, you know, hopefully people only write plays about moments of import, right? So I've been trapped by my own brain in the house for the past 3 years, and this play describes the transition period of, you know, of the end of that period,
right?
And how that comes about,
right?
And it's, you know, those moments of crisis are what we find interesting as an audience,
right?
And as an actor,
and I think it's interesting because would you term? I mean, you even say in your biographical material that you're a sucker for a laugh. You're primarily comedic actress.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's
so,
where I, you know, my wheelhouse. You
so
know?
Even though this is a comedy, it is a. I wouldn't even call it a dark comedy. I like the term poignant comedy because it's it's a comedy with so much heart and so much sensitivity. But did you find it challenging? I believe, and I would be interested in everyone's point on this, that if you can be a funny actor, an effectively funny actor, that, you know, straight drama is a far easier thing to address than for dramatic actors who are trying to be funny.
I've never
seen Robert De Niro in anything where I found him funny.
Right.
And everyone's just like,
really?
Oh,
not
Midnight
Brazil?
Run. And actually, no, Brazil.
Brazil. Come on,
I'll give you Brazil.
That's really sort of the
but
only
the
one.
Meet the Fockers stuff and even Midnight Run. I mean, sharing the stage with the screen with Charles Grodin, I ain't laughing at anything De Niro does. And you know, you could talk about that. But anyway, not to go off on a tangent about that. But what is your comfort level performing? How has this experience been for you? Has it been more challenging than a comedy or what?
Yes, it has been. There's a lot of... each relationship requires a different tools, you know, for her. There are, I'm not going to give it away, but, you know, people come into her life that are challenging.
Right.
and it is more difficult for me to address drama. I've been doing it more recently. Right. But I have run across plenty of casting directors who, when they, you know, in workshops and such the like, they'll use comedy material even though they're doing a dramatic show. And I've heard multiple casting directors say, if you can do comedy, you can do our show.
Right.
You know, even though it's NCIS or, you know, whatever. I mean, and there's aspects of comedy and a lot of procedurals, I guess. But you know, many people that I've encountered have said, if you can do the comedy, you can do the trauma. That's not hard. You know?
Because at the end of the day, it's subtlety.
Yeah.
I mean, what's effective comedy? It's subtlety.
Yeah. Timing
and
subtlety. Exactly. And I do think that it's not something you can teach to everybody.
No.
You know?
No, I know. I really believe that. What is your... you look like you were about to say something.
No, I'm in a complete agreement with what you're talking about. I'm kind of curious if anybody in this room right now knows of anyone like your character in real life. Someone that, you know... is so taken aback by the loss that they... Do you know anybody like that?
I don't.
But they shut out the rest of the world for that period of time and or longer? Because I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
She's still doing it.
From a causal event, like some traumatic thing, and then just sort of totally shifted
from losing her daughter.
Really?
And, I mean, being a very social person before that, she and her daughter, both, and her daughter was very beautiful. She was ravaged by cancer. And this woman, to this day, the whole house is a shrine to her.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And she simply cannot leave, only to go to the graveside and visit her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Put that name down, because I want to write a play about that.
Yeah, as well.
You know, it's funny, though. Not funny, but what's interesting about your character is that in addition to your own issue, the agoraphobia that's already been mentioned, you're also the hub of the wheel for all of these other issues that the other people in your house have.
Yeah.
Not only the people that live there, but the people who visit there as well.
Yeah.
So that's quite a juggling act for a performer to be, you know, really the engine and the through line of it. Has that been taxing? Have you relished it, enjoyed it? Has it been a little...
It's an interesting, you know, as a comedian and as a character actress, I have in the past usually played subsidiary roles. You know, I'll be the wacky person who comes in and, you know, does their thing and then leaves and, you know, gets to, you know, have some bonbons in the dressing room while everybody else is doing the hard work. And it's the last play I was in, Look Homeward, Angel, with a production company, and I played a major role in that one also, which was not so funny.
Yeah. But you were wonderful. I saw that production.
Thank you very much. It was, you know, that was challenging too. You know, carrying the major part in a show is very different than playing a character part. You know?
Oh, yeah, because you get to just be the one who drops in and says funny things, and you're not saddled with
exactly.
the narrative.
Yeah. 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 You can be as wacky as you know, as is appropriate to be.
Appropriate wackiness. We have to take a little bit of a break because we don't have an arts calendar. I have a review that I have to throw in, and then we'll come back and talk to Allison and, of course, talk to Matt, who's waiting so patiently here. But I do want to throw this out there because before we move on, Michael, as I said at the beginning of the show, I did go to New York to see the latest production of Tony and Tina. And I had thought about scripting this review, and then I realized, you know what, I'm not going to script the review because I did not write anything while I was there. Because it's interactive, I didn't want to sort of have a pen out and throw the performers off. But, you know, I did the show 25 years ago, and you always romanticize things from your past, and I was very careful not to go into it and be like, make this like what I did. But there was never any danger of that. It has been updated and modified and is so a show and a wedding of today. It was a completely new experience. And for someone who did the show for 18 months to go see a show and then have that feeling from it really is a great testament to what they've done. It's more interactive than our show was. You actually start at Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis High School, which is the FAME school, which used to be the High School of Performing Arts. Mm-hmm. And then they walk you through Times Square completely, through Schubert Alley, and then you wind up downstairs at Guy Fieri's American Cafe restaurant there. And that alone, logistically, moving an entire church full of people to a restaurant.
Which is how many approximately?
Oh, I mean, there were easily over 100 the night that I was there.
Yeah.
Wow. And it crackles. They're still the big problem you can run into with something like Tony and Tina's that is you know, character driven and based on, in this case, an Italian, you know, broad Italian ethnicity, is that it becomes, you worry about it becoming like Italian land at Disney World. And it never is that. They're organic characters, they're truthful people, and that's why people embrace it so much. But it was an absolute hoot. Had a great time.
And is this the first production of the show that has been updated? It was, you know, premiered in New York?
The thing is, I know that they sort of, you have to modulate it.
Yeah.
You have to change it because there's pop culture references and things like that. But, you know, in addition to updating the content of the show, they've also updated the world of the play. Like, there's a live internet feed that goes from the thing, so you can go online and sort of see what's going on. Of course, the people are encouraged to take pictures and tweet it from the experience. It's just like when we did the show, people didn't do that at weddings. People barely had cell phones when we did the show.
Right.
But now that's such a part of the culture and that they've embraced it, and it only fuels the energy of the show.
It enhanced everything. It didn't take away.
Oh, no. That's what it's all about. And it was an absolute stitch. You can't call anyone out because it's such a collaborative effort. But Donnie Dolce is the singer in the band.
He's got the name for it.
Actually, in this, he's sort of a DJ singer because he handles the music. They don't have a full band for this one. But his name is Mika Speyer, and he was very, very funny. He's a very funny fellow and a nice gentleman as well. We spoke to him after the show briefly. The show is Tony and Tina's Wedding, and the website, TonyLovesTina.com. That's TonyLovesTina.com. Just cannot recommend it high enough. And one of those things that you can still take family too. There were people there that had, not for real, real young kids, but, you know, younger children that were with them. They were, the cast was especially attentive in embracing, you know, the younger people and dancing with them and all that. But it's a hoot. It was a hoot, you know, 20 plus years ago, and it still is, and it's a, can, you know.
Affordable?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I think I think it's certainly easier than a lot of other tickets in New York.
It includes dinner and then the show.
You do. You get the dinner. It's just like a wedding reception.
Yeah.
You get the dinner, and my friend actually bought cocktails for me, so I don't know if cocktails are addressed. I think you got to pay out of that. But not that I had so
Lucky
many
you.
that I lost track. But my friend Cindy Katz, Monica couldn't go. So my friend Cindy Katz, great actress from New York. Was
Monica on the trip with you? Or
No, Monica was back here.
Yeah.
Monica had work. Yeah. No, I wouldn't bring Monica and then leave her in a hotel.
Well, I don't know, Paul.
She had bigger fish to fry.
She did. But yes.
Bigger
no,
shows
just,
to see.
Yes.
And we will throw it out again before the end of the hour. TonyLovesTina.com. This is currently
awesome.
Playing in Times Square. Yes.
Good
go, go, go.
And you saw your lovely mother, and it was all
I saw
great
Charlotte.
Trip. Yeah, great
Why
trip.
Didn't you bring me to the goddamn play? I'm only in New York 60 goddamn minutes from Brewster. I could have been there.
Sorry, Mom. Sorry. I sound bitter?
Charlotte.
She does.
Michael. That's what you're going to say? That's what you're going to chime in with? You're going to mock my mother, I tell you.
She's such a dear.
Michael, I'm not reading his intro. You read Matt's intro.
Oh, hey.
I will happily read his intro, Paul. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, last worked with Seaglass Theater as an actor in their critically acclaimed production of Kvetch. His previous directing credits include Coming Attractions, White House Murder Case, Family of Man, and Mall America with Theater Neo. He also directed the short film Happy Birthday, Little Grace. You've seen him on television, on Criminal Minds, Strong Medicine, Boy Meets World, Quantum Leap. Film credits include What's Love Got to Do with It, Abracadabra, and If You Knew Ira. Currently, he is helming Seaglass Theater's production of Wake. Please welcome Matt Kirkwood.
See, that I've gotten before.
Well, we're out of time.
How are you?
All right.
So how are you holding up in the joy that is known as Tech Week?
Oh, I'm not holding it. People are holding me up. Kimberly Van Leeuwen is actually, an amazing producer, so she's been very...
I'm sorry.
She is.
Yeah. She is. Sorry. Who is she? Sorry.
You've met her.
I met her, yes.
I think you have.
Tall woman.
She has your back.
Yeah. So she's kind of propping me up every night, you know. So
All of us.
Yeah. She's been actually absolutely fantastic to work with.
You have to be excited with what you're seeing on the stage, though.
I am. I'm very happy. You know, the cast is great. They've been through a lot. You know, it's... We actually did an interesting rehearsal process. It was long enough where we could do like one scene a day. It was like kind of like that at the beginning, and then we started putting things together, having run throughs, and then seeing where we're at, and then going back working things. So it was that kind of process,
right? You know. And how has this been? Has the process been similar to it? It's such an unusual play, and there's so many worlds. And once again, without giving too much away, there's so many different worlds that come together on stage in this play.
Right.
Has the process of preparing the actors for it been similar to past work you've done? Like, do you have sort of a set method that you observe as a director, or is it a modify change with each project?
It's modified change with each project. So, if it's a comedy, of course, it's different. If it's a musical, The Coming Attractions was more of a musical. So that process is certainly different. The thing about this play is making sure everything is on a balanced level, because there's a lot of humorous of, moments of high comedy as opposed to moments of really poignant drama. So finding that balance so it's not disjointed and it doesn't look like two different plays.
It's
finding that balance and finding out, how they kind of meld together.
That's interesting that you say that, because I've seen that I've seen it on local stages because I live here now, and I'm sure when I lived in Chicago, I saw it there too. It's just my memory is fading. But you do see that quite a bit. You see the productions where... it's fairly uniform, and then there's one person who looks like they're in from another show.
Mm-hmm.
And thematically, they don't match, and tonally, they don't match.
Right.
And especially with a show like this, which is a small cast of 5 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be imperative.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Everyone has to be on the same page as far as that's concerned.
And did you find that... Well, you know what? See, I can't even ask this question because I don't want to go into... I know the question that I want to ask, but I can't ask it because I don't want to reveal a primary element of the show.
Well, you
so I have to ask him something else along those lines. When you read the show, I remember we spoke and you had talked about a visual representation. I found this very interesting because you spoke about a visual representation as sort of a creative
starting point,
jumping-off point. Is that something you've always applied? In this case, it was a painting.
But, yeah, in this case, it was a painting. It was Manet's The Railway, a railway station. There's other, you know, sometimes I'll use a piece of music that kind of gets me going on the piece, that kind of reminds me, or artwork. And this in this case, it was a piece of art. That kind of, you know, it's interesting that, well, there's one scene where they kind of very quickly kind of recreate that piece, you know, that moment in the play. So, but I always use that, and it was just the way one person in the painting was looking out, one person was looking in. It just kind of like hit home for me about what was going on with the two main characters, two of the main characters.
Matt, let me ask you this too, because this is something I always find fascinating. The response to a director such as yourself or any director, Paul, you're a director as well, and how much do you let the actors bring to this? I mean, you do accepting what it is that they want to do when perhaps it's something that you would like to go in a different direction with, but you settle for what it is that they want.
It's interesting. I try not to. I
haven't been fired yet.
No, I try not. You know, I always, you know, because you hire the actor to bring their own take on the part. You know, so you try not to, you know, I don't hire an actor and say, okay, you could do it this way, because why not just have me get up and do it, you know? Right. So, and a lot, I offer, I welcome input from all the actors about how their characters are going, where they're going. Sometimes it'll say, well, okay, you know, pace-wise or characterization-wise, you know, I'll ask a lot of questions just to see where they're at and make sure that we are on the same page. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the first thing we did, the first week of rehearsal, we asked a lot of questions about the characters, about their breakdowns, about their backgrounds, where they came from, those kind of things. So we all were on the same page. So by the time we started working, you know, in rehearsals, everyone was on board, and so there was no misunderstanding. Wow. So we tried to set it up that way.
Smart.
Do you find that, because you're primarily an actor, but you've directed quite a bit, obviously. What is it? Is there one you prefer, or is it?
You know, it depends on the piece.
Completely different animals.
It depends on the piece. Like sometimes I'll read a piece and I'll say, "Oh, I love to direct this. I have such a visual idea about it." Sometimes I'll look at a piece and I say, "Oh my God, I want to play this character." And sometimes I'll read something and I'll just go see it somewhere. Yeah. So, you know, so it depends on the piece.
We didn't realize that we had, and this is one of the joys of Facebook, that Matt and I had friends from, you went to college actually with one of my best friends from high school who lived about four houses away from me in Connecticut.
Is that Michael?
Michael Lapola.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then also we found out that we had another mutual friend from my years in Chicago, which was Matt Moratini.
Mark
Moratini, I'm sorry.
Obviously, he's a better friend than mine.
Yes, he is. Bald guy, great voice, you know.
Exactly.
But it's just so funny. It's one of those things.
It's a small world.
You just find out, and you know, you wouldn't ever find that out without Facebook. You just sort of look at that whole, you know, world of friends. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Wake. This is the next Seaglass Theater production. The seaglasstheater.org is where you go for tickets and information. It opens Saturday, plays through May 25th. It's 5 weeks only, and that's at the Fremont Center Theater. That's 1000 Fremont Avenue in South Pasadena. And if you are a group, call 818-533-8441. That's 818-533-8441. Lots of great deals for groups. And as you mentioned, Michael,
Mother's Day.
Yeah. High tea on May 11th.
For the month.
Which is, and you know what? Mm-hmm. It's not just bringing your mother to a show because of the relationship, and I think both you, Allison, and Allison and Mark here would know it's not only a show like you want to bring your mom to a play, bring her to any play, you know, but this because of the storyline and because of the relationship. It's actually an enriching, I think, experience for mother-daughter to watch.
Oh, yeah, it's, definitely.
Don't you say?
It's very much a play about
mothers
that
and daughters.
Mother-daughter relationship, you know, in the three generations. You know, we have all these aspects.
In a funeral home.
Yeah, in a funeral home, as you do.
Exactly.
How was that aspect of things, for both of you, actually, but I'll start with you, Matt. How was that aspect of things in terms of how much in your prep did the fact that the play took place in a funeral home, even though it's sort of, it doesn't really hinge on the fact that it's in a funeral home, or would you say it does?
It kind of does. Yeah. It kind of does. You know, the whole, you know, I don't know if this is giving anything away, but the whole point is, you know, to you have to dance with the dead to rejoin the living, was my basically theme for this. So so it does have to do that because of what she's going through and how she's more comfortable with, you know.
Okay.
So, so yeah, no, it had to be. Yeah, I don't see it any
no,
other way.
You know, trying to,
if it was set in a hospital, it wouldn't have the same effect. Or if it,
yes.
You know, or a nursing home.
It could be some
or,
other, you know, carpenter shop.
Exactly.
Right. So all of these, all of these topics that we're dancing around, you'll have to come see the play to get these questions answered. Uh-huh. Because it sounds like we're being vague, but we're not being vague. We're just preserving your theater-going experience.
Yes,
for you.
Exactly.
So,
don't want to ruin it.
Exactly.
And you've got some other wonderful actors in the show.
Oh, yes. We have a number of them.
Michael Connors, Ali Costa. Lauren McCormick, who's always
amazing. McCormick. And, of course, Nancy Bergen,
Yeah.
who is... there's really not... You know, with a cast this small, the weight is... I mean, even though you're the hub of the wheel, the weight is equally shared in this.
Yeah, it really is. That, I feel like we're all pretty even.
There's not a weak link in this cast. Very strong.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Are you having fun? You said you were tired for sure.
I am tired right now because it's tech week. But yes, I am having fun. It's really been a great joy working with all of these actors. And I have to say I've really enjoyed the process working with Matt also. I sort of as a end result of being that person who often just comes in, says a few wacky things and goes, I frequently am not directed. I'm given blocking, and I am the least of their worries. I'm wacky, and they've got bigger fish to fry, and they're directing the main characters, and I pretty much don't get direction. And so this has been kind of a new experience for me, frankly, to really, you know, since college, I haven't gotten this much real, you know, talking about the characters and the relationships and why, and what do you think about this, and... And it's been very inspiring for me to work this way.
Oh, isn't that the luxury that we never have?
Yeah,
isn't
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a good point because I directed you in Christmas Twist, and
did you do anything but say come in here, go out there?
I really didn't. No, I mean really didn't. Your point is a valid one, and I only say that because I don't want people to think that, you know, it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
I don't recall actually doing anything but telling you where to stand when.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like Matt said, you know, you hire an actor to bring what they bring. And if they're bringing something that's good and fits the play, you don't really have to direct them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, maybe I'm tooting my own horn, but whatever, you know, I'm cast appropriately, I guess. I bring what I bring. They like it. And they can focus on directing people who... need more help or, you know, need to, you know, have a bigger part or...
Or are saddled with narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it might be. Yeah. But so, yeah, when you're that wacky sidekick.
Yes, you know that's very true. And I'm while you're talking about
sing
this...
Sing a crazy Christmas carol and walk off the stage.
Well, and the other thing, too, in our in 25 words or less about what we did, we were doing a parody where your characters are already pretty defined for you. It's just
exactly.
a matter of how you fracture them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, how you make that left. It's that time, Michael.
That
it's the time
indeed.
For our
we
last
baptize.
5 minutes of the show.
Baptize
and,
our guests.
Matt, I didn't tell you about this, but I told Allison about it beforehand, so we'll
don't
start
get nervous,
with her.
Matt. Don't care.
We always like to ask our performers that are on the show about a on-stage disaster, some embarrassing mishap that happened at any point in their career, something going wrong on stage that was either funny or embarrassing or caused injury, or all three. It doesn't. But
Matt's eyes are going like a roulette wheel right now.
Which to pick? I
Which
don't know.
To pick? There's so many.
The high water mark, the one that we're still trying to beat after 200 shows, was a guy who put on a theme park costume and walked out on stage and only then realized that there was a live rat in the costume with him.
Oh, my God.
So that
oh
was
my
the,
word.
I can't beat that.
No, you don't have to
be that exciting.
You don't have to beat it.
Or
you
know, it's terrifying.
I did. You know, I did direct my wife in a show, in a one-woman show.
That's terrifying.
That was terrifying. You know, and I have had bad
Oh, Matt's wife. I saw that. Yeah. That was the name.
I've had bad experiences, you know, as an actor working with directors, but that's a whole nother show. But I worked, you know, I was directing her, and it was a two-person play. It was a short play. It was part of a huge international festival, and they were on stage, and this huge cockroach walked, and she's deathly afraid of cockroaches.
Okay,
you know, if there's a spider in my home, she can get rid of it no problem. I'm the one that screams like a girl. So, but the cockroach is like it's like
a whole different game.
And this thing was its own set piece. You know, I mean, this was
really it's either a cockroach or a badger.
It was a cockroach. yeah, we were still not sure. You know, but they were sitting, and it was a quiet moment, and this thing just walked on stage, and it was exactly between, you know, right smack in the middle of the two of them. And she was on one side of the stage, he was on the other, and this thing was this thing, and she just could not take her eyes off it. And I'm sitting there, you know, in the audience. I can't go on stage and, you know, kill it. And finally the other actor got, you know, finally walked up and, you know, in the middle of his dialogue, got up and just smashed it and then picked it up. And then she started talking again. So it was...
just transfixed.
It's just transfixed on it. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife Monica would be exactly the same way. And interestingly enough, same thing. Any other insect doesn't bother at all. A cockroach might as well be a rat with five heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is your... Oh, you got one for us, Alice?
Well,
yeah.
The one that sticks out in my mind is when I was doing Lucky Stiff, you know, musicals, there was one place where there was a repeat at the end of the phrase, and we had established, the musical director and I, during rehearsals and most of the shows that we'd done, that we were going to repeat that repeat. So the phrase repeated four times. And as we went on, we found, okay, well, we don't need that long. So we'll just do, we discussed, I thought I understood. We'll do one repeat so that it repeats two times. And he played it one time. So I was singing along and then... finish that phrase quick.
Gotta wrap it up.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
man.
Yeah, and when you're just out there all by yourself.
There's nothing you can do. It's like, that's the joy of live theater.
Everyone knows what happened.
Yes.
Everyone knows what happened. Oh, what a pleasure having both of you on.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely.
Thank you. Great joy talking to two of our team members, one cast and one director, Allison Blanchard and Matt Kirkwood are with us, and we have been discussing Wake. That's the Seaglass Theater
production. Carrie Krim, of course, was with us.
Carrie Krim earlier in the hour. Thank you, Michael. And once again, tickets and information, seaglasstheater.org. Still tickets for opening, which is Saturday. And like we said, you'll get to meet the cast. And also, there's a beautiful reception with Russian
party.
Foods.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be amazing.
And everything. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yes. They always are with Seaglass.
Yes.
We always,
Seaglass goes all out.
We do.
May I say.
And you get to meet the playwright and... knowing what your schedule has been like this week, the two of you, thank you so much for finding time to talk to us about
thank
it.
Thank you
for
having me.
Grateful.
Thank you.
Of course, our pleasure.
Absolutely.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
Nice to be back after week off. And
nice to have you back.
Look forward to sharing the mic with you next week.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.